This is an ABC podcast. You're listening to Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia.
With or without climate change, it is important that our cultural values are maintained. But climate change is speeding up these opportunities. And for that matter, the metaverse to me is an opportunity. I feel that right now, this is what we have at hand. How we use it, all I can say is with all the hope that I have that it is used for the benefit of all our Tuvaluans.
Home is where the heart is. But what happens when your home disappears? This is a very real threat from many of our island nations. Rising sea levels are swallowing up our traditional homes. So, how do you preserve a culture when the land it's tied to is slipping away? I'm Seyuli Salamasina von Reiki, and this is Culture Compass, an exploration of survival, revival, and connection throughout the Pacific. In the face of climate change, we're having to do things differently. Some of the most affected nations are taking proactive steps to document and record their sacred sites, their languages, and their cultural practices as a last resort. And they're looking to unexpected places like the metaverse and museums to help them in the process. Tuvalu is sinking. And if things don't change dramatically, they could take the undesirable title of being the first country whose landmass will disappear because of climate change. Tuvalu is planning to build a digital version of itself, one that can't be washed away by rising sea levels. Moira Simmons has worked for the Tuvaluan government in foreign affairs and is currently studying her master's in national security. She thinks the plan to digitize her country and culture is a solid backup plan.
The metaverse, this is a prospect that our government is looking at currently, and the idea is to ensure that we preserve the values and practices of our people in a very different form. We've heard about organizations that use the metaverse, but never a state for that matter. And I think as much as people might think of this as something that is skeptical, I believe that this just goes to show the vulnerability that we are facing. So our Honorable Simon Kofi had put forth this to look at ways. This comes under the Future Now project. And under this project, there are four initiatives, and the initiatives basically center around ensuring that our values are maintained and preserved. So you might have heard of the Falepili Union Treaty, which uses the word Falepili, that acknowledges, you know, the relations that you have with your neighbor. There's also the Kaitasi and the ideology about the Ava, which is to respect your elders. And these are all values that we have. I'm sure that the people and the brains behind these initiatives are doing the best they can to ensure that they capture all the values and practices of our people, that they are universal and accessible in the sense that all Tuvaluans can access this platform and ensure that it captures all of our identity and it is not selective. To me personally, it's work in progress, and I commend the efforts that everyone has put forth, but I hope that we all work together for an island such as Tuvalu.
Can you tell me more about the metaverse? What kind of content will be up there?
So as it stands, it's work in progress, but the kind of information that is looked to be stored in the metaverse involves our cultural practices, so our traditions. So this can be things from our traditions. It can be things from our myths, our legends, for example, you know, our folklore. It can also be a picturistic view of what our islands were made up of. So our homes, you know, the places that we eat, the places that we sleep, our communal settings, our art and craft. And this is all part of the Tuvaluan way. There's been discussions around our maritime boundaries. There's been discussions around our islands as a whole, both ocean and land. I have faith that our leaders, our specialists who are looking into this, will continue to have discussions with our people to ensure that we capture the Tuvaluan way.
It's so amazing and very interesting. But how did people living in Tuvalu react to the proposal at the time?
So from my point of view, I feel that so far the idea is acknowledged and it's recognized. But as you may be aware, within the Pacific, all ideas need to continue with our consultations. Like every population and in every community, there's more to learn. I feel that it is the step in the right direction. Because with or without climate change, it is important that our cultural values are maintained. But climate change is causing this, it's speeding up these opportunities. And for that matter, the metaverse to me is an opportunity. I am yet to see how this moves forward and how this progresses, but I feel that right now, this is what we have at hand. How we use it, all I can say is that with all the hope that I have that it is used for the benefit of all our Tuvaluans.
Yeah, the sea levels are continuing to rise from climate change. So how is this affecting life in Tuvalu and being able to provide for yourselves as a nation?
Tuvalu is the fourth smallest country in the world. There's only 26 square kilometers of land. And in terms of heights above sea level, we are literally sitting at about 2 to 3 meters above sea level, meaning we are extremely at the front line of this climate crisis. I feel that the challenges and the vulnerabilities that the Tuvaluan people face and many low-lying states in the Pacific continues to rise at an extenuating rate, not only because of sea level, but because of saltwater intrusion that affects crops, that affects food security, that affects our salt, our freshwater lands, that provides water for our people. In terms of its implications on our physical environment, I believe food security for that matter, we have something called the bulaka plant. So it's the babai. It's like the giant swarm taro. And in our feasts, this has been the highlight of our feasts. And as a result of climate change and saltwater intrusion, our harvests haven't been able to provide as much yield as they used to before, because the giant swarm taro is such that you need to provide manure, you need to feed it so that it continues to grow. And over the years, we have seen that looking after these plants has been an arduous task. Arduous in the sense that the resistance to salt makes it very difficult. We've also had crop festivals like the Nafa in Baitupu. And during these crop festivals, they showcase the biggest yield, the biggest taro that a farmer can grow within a certain time. We've seen that this has changed. And the reason it has changed, it is because of climate change. We've also seen that because the temperatures have increased, the frequency of having traditional games has also changed. Before, we would see a lot of kilikiti or traditional cricket taking place in our communities where people, you know, the program starts from 6 a.m. and it finishes at 6 p.m. And we have either if it's all the women, all the men, or it's mixed. And our groups would stand the whole day and take part in these competitions. But I've seen that this has changed. Now people are opting for shorter games like volleyball, shorter games like soccer or football. And the reason being is that it's just become so hot that people can't really stand from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. In the olden days, people would actually stand the whole day to do this, yes? And these traditional games are an important part of our culture because it's not the normal cricket, it's the traditional kilikitsi, as the Tuvaluans would call it. So all in all, there has been implications to our culture, but because our communities, because our population is smaller than most, there is the tendency of our people to try their best to strengthen our practices, regardless of whether they are in Tuvalu or whether they move. The resilience of our people is empowered by the fact that we have strong ties, you know, coming from the Pacific, where we still have those strong ties. And I look to these ties. I look to the strength of our culture and our cultural security to maintain our resilience, especially in times of climate change.
The low-lying atoll of Tokelau sits just 3 to 5 meters above sea level. So every little bit of rising ocean is felt across the country. For the people of Tokelau, climate change is an existential crisis as much as an environmental one. And they're busy trying to preserve their cultural identity for the future as they lead the charge to halt global warming. They've collaborated with Te Papa, the Museum of New Zealand, to collect, document, and showcase their sacred and everyday artifacts. Paula Faiva has a long history of fighting for climate justice in Tokelau, and she played a big role in the Ika project with Te Papa.
Project Ika focused on people living on the coral atolls of Tokelau, offering an opportunity to voice the changes in the innovative responses undertaken by Tokelau people as a way of mitigating the effect of climate change. The three main areas that we're addressing this project was, one, the climate change and innovation. Two was the traditional educational knowledge, and the living with change, which is the everyday experiences with climate change. The project was interested to learn how Tokelau strengthen their resilience as a community and innovative in their responses to climate change. The project definitely helped to articulate and document Hapa Tokelau or the Tokelau's way and to be shared with other communities.
For people who might not know much about Tokelau, can you describe it for us and tell us a bit about why climate change is such a big threat to island life?
Tokelau is one of the most remote islands in the world. It's in the South Pacific Ocean, about halfway between Hawaii and Aotearoa, New Zealand. Tokelau is made up of three low-lying atolls, namely Hokkaido, Nukunonu, and Atahu. And these atolls are made up of sand and coral, built up over time on the surface of reef, which has grown on top of a submerged volcano. Though not many people know that. The land is between 3 to 5 meters above the sea level. Tokelau currently has no air service. And the only way for you to get to Tokelau is by boat. And that is from Samoa. So if you want to go to Tokelau, you get to catch a flight to Samoa and then jump on the boat, which will take you 24 hours to get there. And that is home for roughly about 1,500 people.
You're in New Zealand at the moment, but did you previously live in Tokelau?
I was born in Hokkaido, Tokelau, and I had very close ties to Nukunonu and Atahu. I left Tokelau when I was 12 years old for schooling in New Zealand. But I have spent most of my working life serving Tokelau in Tokelau. But due to the nature of my work, I'm able to move between Tokelau and New Zealand. My family is based in New Zealand, or when I do get to go to Tokelau, they come with me.
What was your life like there? How is it changing for people growing up there now compared to when you were younger?
And there's a lot of change. Every time you go, you see change. You know, the Tokelau that I left behind, it was just to be away for 6 months. You go back, you notice changes. And of course, the challenges on Tokelau's culture. And I will give some examples where, well, as we know, the only way that Tokelau get their water is through the rain. And that is one of the challenges. The availability of water is often a concern. And this is due to not only the long dry spells, but the changes to the lifestyle. For example, the Moreland style houses have more than one running tap. And this is, you know, for the domestic purposes. So that puts a demand on the water availability in Tokelau. And there is an increased number of imported vehicles, of course, across the three echelon. When during my time, there's none. And that's when I lived at the age of 12, there was nothing. Everything was done manually. Everyone was walking from one place to the other. I must say more than 60% of the vehicles in Tokelau are golf cars. So they are managing, they are aware. The emission is pretty, it's next to nothing really. But still we have, all have a responsibility to keep that down. And emission is an emission.
So are there particular threats to Tokelau due to the rising sea levels?
Yeah, of course, for a low-lying atoll. And we do say that we are right at the front. The availability of natural resources, they used to be available for our buildings and it's not easily available, and that's due to coastal erosion. An example of the Kanawa tree was used to be used for making our canoes. It's not easy to get those now, and because it takes many years for those trees to mature, those are not easily available now.
You understand, in 2017, you worked with Te Papa, the Museum of New Zealand, on a special project to preserve Tokelauan culture. How did that project come about?
The Te Papa Museum, through its Pacific team, approached Tokelau Climate Change to discuss the a co-collecting climate change project, which is called Project ICA in Tokelau and Te Papa. And this project took Te Papa to Tokelau to not only see for themselves what Tokelau has been crying out for many years, but also to document the effect of climate change on the three atoll. I need to say, though, that the initiative was welcome and supported by the three Tokelauanga, or the Council of Elders on each atoll, because they're concerned that it's a low-lying coral atoll nation. Tokelau has long considered among the most vulnerable to the impact of climate change. And of course, impacting, presenting enormous challenges on the identity and culture, more so the well-being of Tokelau. And Tokelau's world is closely tied to their land. So with the erosion and this threat, that's a threat to the existence.
The museum worked with a team of local collectors to document significant items. What were some taonga that were collected?
So the tradition of the Taoist is the canoe vela, which goes back to four generations. So they, you know, one of the family were able to offer that because it tells a story. This one object was able to tell a story of a family and how they passed over from one generation to generation and how it provided this vela as part of the canoe, provided for this family or extended family, and in some situation to the whole community. Another was others with pupu tatai, which is a coconut shell container. And again, that tells the story of how the wusha were captured and stored in this coconut shell. It would last a day. And we talked about, I mentioned how the availability of how water is actually going to Tokelau. But with the changes of our lifestyle, how, you know, even this big water tanks that we are now receiving, that is still not enough to provide for a family. But in this situation, this coconut shell, or we call it bubudatai, it tells the story of how this water, you know, captured water that would last a single person for a day. Another one is taula. A taula is actually also coconut shell, and it's four coconut shells that are tied together, and that was used to fetch the water from the well that used to exist back in our times. Now, that is no longer there. But this item tells a story of the life that used to be in Tokelau. Another one is the tuluma. Another taula was the tuluma. We also tell the story. Tuluma is a wooden fishing box. There were holes for the fishing gears for the master fishermen, or fishermen when they go fishing. Now, that will tell, again, a story on how they would provide their tuluma, the holes, the tools they used to be used to provide for the family, extended family, and again, the community. Now, local materials are not easily available these days, but the baskets or the getters, the atos that came through, all each tells a different story based on the materials and the patterns that were used to make their basket. It could either tell a story about the connection with neighboring islands based on the materials that were used, but also the patterns, because it could be a pattern that was learned from Samoa or Cook Island or Tuvalu. So that one basket will tell the connection with the neighboring islands, as well as the materials and the colors.
I have to tell you a story. My grandfather's sister gave me a tuluma, and I still have it, and it's very precious to me. I was wondering, in the years since these taonga were documented, have they become harder to access or make in Tokelau? As you said, the wood itself is hard to access. I mean, it's very rare now.
Yeah.
But how about other traditional artifacts or the mats and things like that?
Yeah, you know, the other challenge to that is, apart from the wood, it's actually the keepers of the traditional knowledge. We are losing them fast. Either we are passing on, going to a much better world, or they have left Tokelau to come to New Zealand or Australia or even Samoa. Those are the challenges that we are currently facing. There are not many people with those knowledge that we know. However, there are activities or programs that are, you know, they recognize that. And there are now activities to capture to try and pass on or, you know, to value our keepers of the knowledge, which is, you know, like our old people.
Yeah. Do you think this coal collecting project is a sustainable way to document Pacific cultures in nations impacted by climate change?
I have met with the work of the project that we partnered with Te Papa. And, you know, I have met a lot of young people, and I have spoken to also families as groups, and they have shared their experiences, you know, when they visited the exhibition at Te Papa, and how they gain new knowledge which they never knew or had. Like you said, you said that you have a tuluma at home. You know, some young people said, we didn't know and we didn't ask what they were for. So it took them to go to visit Te Papa, the exhibition at Te Papa, to find out what that is. And also for them to see the name of their great-great-grand, when they said uncle or an auntie, you know, name that is labeled, you know, it's labeled under, you know, an object. So they reawakened. It gave them a good energy and they gained confidence. So it definitely did something for their confidence and made them want to find out more about who they are, about their culture.
It's fascinating, though, when you say that they had to go to the museum to find out. Yeah. Are there any other ways that culture is adapting or being preserved in Tokelau?
With Tokelau noticing the fast changes and coming to understand more about climate changes and the risk they pose upon and the changes to their culture. They are running, like I said, they're running a lot of programs that, you know, with the traditional fishing methods and resources used. There's a lot more conversation and discussion, knowledge passing on from one generation to the next. They explore the roles of the tautai, or the master fisherman, and the different role of the crew on the boat. And of course, the language that associates with fishing comes out then, because it doesn't come out in the everyday conversation. So the young men are now learning that the language and also the methods and the tools and how to read the environment. The other one is actually the traditional weaving. There are also activities that I have meant to, again, for the same reason. And again, the young women are learning the language that associates with that activity. The other one is noticing how our young people love their dancing, the fatele. And so the role of music and art in capturing and sustaining, passing on of the culture and the knowledge, this is also happening. A lot of that is happening in Tokelau. Of course, the storytelling, show music, our songs, the opportunity, the experience with Te Papa really gave us an opening to use that space, the role of such a space to also serve and promote. So, and, you know, it's not to preserve, but it's also to promote and raise awareness and to share and build networking.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. Reflecting on Project AICA, and AICA standing for Innovation, Indigenous Knowledge and Atoll Life, what impact do you think it will have for future generations of Tokelauans?
I just want to keep mentioning how climate change is such a priority issue globally and how it affects everyone in different ways. Definitely, those positive stories that make me think and make me realize how they can build confidence within a young person. And that can be shared, and a young person will go and share it with other friends or other people. And they will grow, and then we have young, very capable or confident or grounded young people. And those young people's got to be good for a community.
You cannot sugarcoat climate change in the Pacific. We're fighting on all fronts to protect our island life, including making sure that future generations, no matter where they live, can still practice culture. Whether that means uploading our crafting methods to the metaverse or collecting our coconut containers to showcase in a museum, we're doing all that we can to make sure that our vibrant cultures will stay afloat. This is Culture Compass on ABC Radio Australia. Culture Compass is hosted by me, Seyuli Salamasina von Reiki. Our ABC Radio Australia executive producer is Falangafulu Inga Stunsner. From Deadset Studios, our producer is Lucy McAfee. Supervising producer is Grace Pashley, and our executive producer is Rachel Fountain. Audio editing and sound design by Nick McCorriston. This episode was produced on the lands of the Turrbal, Jagera and Dharambal people. We pay respects to their elders, past and present.